Blog Talk Radio.
We're back. There's my team once again. Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, it looks like I've restarted another episode and I've reconnected. And ideally, Jonathan, you're there. Jonathan?
Yes.
Ah, success. I hate Blog Talk for this. They do that. They'll just stop the show. It's just the connection gets severed somehow and we get lost. And Josie was on the line. Josie, you can call back now. But we'll just do like a split episode. But I've booked an hour. We got about 57 more minutes. So if you can stay a little bit after the top of the hour, we can certainly continue on until we get said what's said. But yeah, back to you, sir. I don't know if you heard my last question. I don't even remember it. It was a good one, though. I know that.
All right, that's great. Well, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me, and then it dumped out. We can talk about technology some other time. But what I was going to say is, as people might have heard, you know that Rod Rosenstein in the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. Despite his transparent lies, obviously tried to incite a movement to get a majority of the cabinet to declare that Donald Trump was unable to fulfill his duties as president, and they wanted to go ahead and send him in with a wire. And his denials are completely unconvincing, and the proof is that he really did do it, and he should have been, you know, brought up on charges, as far as I'm concerned. And so there's been talk ever since now of trying to declare President Trump unfit for office. He's crazy, whatever like this. And clearly because he didn't vote for them, he must be crazy. We voted for him instead of other people, so they can't accept that. I mean, really, you remember in the Soviet Union, people who did not go along with the Communist Party line were literally branded as mentally ill, and that justified removing them from society and things like it. But anyway, so there's been this long attempt to try to use the 25th Amendment to remove the president. Finally, we got to the point where last week, Nancy Pelosi and a congressman, I have to look up, proposed putting in legislation to set up a commission to declare the president unfit for office. Now, it's interesting because, and everybody's calling me, I work with the White House Defense Fund, which is obviously looking at defending the institution of the White House on this topic. And you and others are asking, well, can they do that? And it's rather weird because people have to watch this. Many constitutional amendments, the last section says Congress has authority to pass legislation to implement this amendment, the terms of this amendment. For example, the 14th Amendment, it declares who's a citizen, but it says Congress can pass law implementing it. The 25th Amendment does not. It does not give authority to Congress to pass legislation pertaining to the 25th Amendment. But if everyone's not obvious, the 25th Amendment has several provisions. If the president dies, the vice president immediately takes office. It says if the vice president and a majority of the members of the cabinet declare him to be under a disability so that he is not able to fulfill his duties and obligations, duties and powers of his office, he can be removed. But it does have a provision that says either a majority of the cabinet or such other body as the Congress may establish by law. Now, I didn't pay attention to that until I went to look at this issue. And my first reaction to that is, of our founders, what in the world were you thinking? Why would you something so important subject to such a vague thing. So now the power to declare that the president is unable to fulfill his duties and powers covers a lot of ground, you know, especially in the Cold War nuclear age, as we were just hearing about. You can have, it could be that he's in a coma. It could be that he just walks off the job and refuses to do the job. It could be that there's a nuclear explosion in a city and we don't know if he's dead or alive. It could be a lot of things, but the one thing we're sure we don't want is to have a bunch of political hacks. And remember, we heard a lot of the stuff with Robert Mueller's investigation. Just because someone is a Republican, does not mean they're one of the good guys. It does not mean they're not state establishment. There are an awful lot of Republicans who are Republicans just because the Democrat ticket was filled in their district, and so they said, "What the heck? I'll pretend to be a Republican." Or, you know, and they really like Cindy McCain is endorsing, and Carlene Fioroni is endorsing Joe Biden. Like you were ever a Republican, you know, who are you fooling? So the idea of a bipartisan commission even does not give us any kind. I mean, it make it worse. So what I started to do in throwing something together, partly because you asked, and partly because White House Defense Fund is interested, is because the Constitution does allow the Congress to come up with its own body. Like, you know, even though the president's never going to sign it, is that it raises the question that they would exploit the lack of specificity to make things worse. So what I think the Senate has to do or should do is pass a bill filling in the ambiguity or the vagueness and make it more concrete. And so, you know, I wrote a bill for the U.S. Senate for Action Radio's bill proposal that would specify, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to have I don't think the Constitution, the 25th Amendment, says it has to be a standing commission. It says whatever other body that the Congress should establish. So my proposal is that the commission depends on the circumstance and it will only come into being at the time there is an alleged disability to prevent intrigue, something that the founders would be very concerned about, to prevent, you know, gamesmanship or opportunism, is to say that the body who will decide will only be determined at the time there is an alleged disability. For example, if it is an allegation that he's dead, I want to see the physician who signed the death certificate and the medical examiner of that jurisdiction. Well, someone engaged in intrigue will not know ahead of time who that's going to be. If it's something that he just refuses to do his job, for example, which is hard to imagine, but, you know, who knows? So I would say that should be his spouse or a member of his family and the chief of staff of the White House sort of thing. If there's something where there's been a nuclear explosion in a city and no one can get in contact, the National Command Authority of the U.S. military is unable to keep in contact with him, that, you know, for a certain period of time, that the official who's supposed to be in contact with him, the highest military ranking officer and maybe the chief of staff, would constitute the committee and say, he is presumed dead because he's the commander in chief. They're supposed to be able to be in contact with him at all times. And if they've lost contact with him, then they should make the vice president the acting authority. Now, one of the things I noticed too in that, what people are I think mistaking, is that the 25th Amendment names an acting president. Unless he's dead, it doesn't actually remove the president. It just says that the vice president shall act as president. But the president established under our U.S. Constitution for elections It should be allowed to undermine elections. The president is chosen by election, and he is still the president, but he might be in a coma in a hospital bed. But he's still legally, constitutionally the president, but we have someone acting as president while he's recuperating or recovering, if ever.
Yeah.
And, of course, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, he could also come back, too. There's provisions in the 25th Amendment that if the president, or in your bill, I'm not sure which exactly, but it's like the president can't come back. This isn't a permanent thing. This may be a temporary thing. If it is a permanent thing, that's a different issue. But if it's only temporary, then the president will, when the same group, I guess, that said he shouldn't be serving during this time, can say, yep, he's good, or she's good, let's go. And people forget that.
It's almost comical if it wasn't serious. Because
you're breaking up a little bit. I'm not sure what's going on with the phone.
I have the door open, and I should get it off speaker, maybe. The thing is, it's interesting
there
because
you go,
it's almost comical. The problem we have with all these laws, like the laws in Virginia and that I was talking about, the gun laws and other things like this, they were written for people who had common sense, who hadn't lost their minds. So these things are all written with a presumption of good faith and rationality. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, nobody would do something stupid with this, would they? Well, welcome to 2020. But the thing is almost comical in the sense that the 25th Amendment, as passed in, what was it, 1965,
mm-hmm.
There have been several versions of this concept, but this one was in 1965, during the Cold War, things like that. But if a majority of the cabinet and the vice president, and I believe it's always and the vice president, which is interesting, but if they declare him to be unfit, then the president can send a letter back saying, oh yes, I am fit. You're like, no, I'm not. No, there's no problem. And then so. Of course, not if in good faith he's in a coma or in a hospital bed or, lost.
Well, what constitutes, that's the problem. What constitutes, inability to serve? Should Biden have been 25th amendmented before even running? It's like going into it, I think you could probably certify that he's not able to do it.
That's something I haven't quite figured out how to shoehorn into this legislation, but I think there should be legislation, which is if someone is in the line of succession,
mm-hmm.
The 25th Amendment assumes that the next person in line is actually competent.
Yeah.
So I would say the Congress should be able to pass some legislation saying, look, if you're in the line of succession, we have a right to know if you're Looney Tunes, like, Nancy Pelosi. so it's like, if you're going to question the president, then we need to question everybody in the line of succession.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But the thing
you
is
like,
the,
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say another provision you need is that the election fraud provision. In other words, the 25th Amendment cannot be used, to premeditatively, put somebody in for the sole purpose of removing them. We need something like that in there. Is that in your bill? I haven't read the whole bill yet.
Not yet. It should be. I mean, but see, what I was thinking is the more specific we mm-hmm. make the process, the less opportunity there is to make these vague accusations. Because what they're saying is that the they've got psychologists who've written articles saying that the president is psychotic and everything like that, because I mean, the people saying that are psychotic because all they're saying is they're spoiled brats and he doesn't agree with me. So he must be psychotic.
Yep.
We have the spoiled brat generation really, who got, A's for putting their name on the paper and getting their way. But the thing is that, The 25th Amendment, as written,
mm-hmm.
let's say it happened in a bunch of the cabinets that followed Rod Rosenstein's treasonous conspiracy, and it as written, it does not require them to actually know anything. It's like if they read something in the Washington Post and they say, "Wow, he sounds crazy to me," so it does not require them to have any actual facts. Whereas my thinking is that if someone's going to say that the president is mentally ill or I don't know what, addicted to drugs or something like that, it has to be a physician who's actually examined him.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be somebody, you know, but as written, the Secretary of Transportation could say, well, I heard from somebody who heard from somebody who heard from somebody who heard from somebody that he, you know, that President Kamala Harris is shooting up heroin. It has to be someone who actually knows,
yeah,
not just somebody who's read something in the paper. And right now we don't have that. So I think that raising this issue, the Senate should pass it, say, okay, you want to talk about this? You know, if you want to say the president's unfit, it has to be an examining physician who's personally examined him, who's following the rules of medicine and concurred by, you know, several other independent doctors. It can't be just be somebody who says, you know, I don't like what he says, so he, you know, anybody who doesn't agree with me is crazy. And so that was what I was hoping to do. But the body that Nancy Pelosi would set up would be even worse. It would be even more so that it would be people who the deck is stacked. Because you know that basically any, as this controversy has come up ever since going back to I can almost remember the guy's name who had mental issues, the vice president. Oh, talk on it. Such a name.
Eagleton? Is that Thomas Eagleton you're talking about? Thomas Eagleton?
Yes.
Okay.
It became more and more of an issue that,
right,
somebody who has not personally examined somebody cannot, mm-hmm, be diagnosing them, you know, over the television. And any, yeah, doctor who's trying to do that really needs to lose their license, because they're engaging in politics, not medicine.
Well, that's like the climate scientists, you know, who get government grants to say that the world's warming up and we're all going to die. You know, I can't believe, mm-hmm, that for a second, because that's the policy the government wants to have. So they're using the scientists to reinforce what they want. Dr. Fascist does the same thing with the CDC. You know, the deep state wants a lockdown so they can destroy Trump. So therefore, they say that this disease will never go away. We're stuck with it, and away you go. And they have all this garbage evidence. You know, this is why it's so fascinating.
Absolutely.
The president's now immune. Yeah. I want to get back to the actual bill and your committee, but or commission. But what it seems to me, as I'm listening to the way you're describing this, that Nancy Pelosi really wants to have like a British Parliament vote of no confidence, which can be for anything.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Go ahead. Talk about that then. Yeah.
No, I mean, I just think that people forget that we had an Articles of Confederation before we had a U.S. Mm-hmm. Constitution. We declared independence from England, and where we had the parliamentary experience. And
okay.
They then we set up these independent states and had a confederation, and we found it to be a disaster, precisely because the executive was too weak and they couldn't raise any money. So we rejected a prime minister,
mm-hmm,
type of leader, national leader, precisely because we tried it and it didn't work. It wasn't just that you could say like, oh, I think maybe the president is not a prime minister. He's stronger than that. No, we actually rejected the prime minister model and said, no, it was a disaster. And so,
mm-hmm,
the president is not a prime minister who, remember, the prime minister is a member of parliament, who is the first among legislators, and he can, mm-hmm, be removed on a moment's notice. And that is what I think they're trying to do, is they're trying to fundamentally damage our constitution and our economy and our country by making the president subject to the whims of the Congress. And that's all this stuff about people say, oh, he's acting like a dictator. Wah, he won't do what I want. No, he's being the president. You're not. You know, he's co-equal, and he doesn't have to, you know, jump every time you stamp your feet. So they say he's violating the Constitution. Nobody can name any part of the Constitution that he's violating, except that he won't, you know, he asserts the powers and prerogatives of the presidency in ways that they don't like. So they are trying to neuter the office of the president by making it subject to, you know, not just the letter of this commission, but the threat of, you know, just to hold the president to heel. They say that those who raise elephants, they will chain a baby elephant, and the elephant learns not to run. The elephant grows up, and he's strong enough to pull the chain out of the ground, but won't do it because he's used to how he was trained. So, you know, so they would threaten the 25th Amendment as they're doing. Yeah, because you know, if you don't violate your conscience and not do your job and do things our way, we're gonna hold the 25th Amendment over you. They've already gone through impeachment. You know, how many men or women would endure that without buckling? Trump won't, but how many presidents would endure that and not say, okay, what do you want?
Wouldn't have to get that far. Romney would have resigned the first week. John McCain maybe the second week. Anybody that the Republicans nominated right. for the most part, except maybe Ted Cruz and a few others, Rand Paul, but for the most part, there's a bunch of wimps.
Mm-hmm.
The commission, the way they want to use it and the way you're describing it, it sounds like a second-guess committee. And so the president would always be second-guessing themselves, thinking, is this act that I do in this case going to cause this commission to politically try and get rid of me simply because they don't like the decision? And this is why this commission is so critical. And I have to, you know, go more into your bill. Can you go more into the bill? The bill really starts in Section 4. You know, once there's a lot of whereases, which is great background material. But what do you want to do in this bill on this commission on presidential disability?
Well,
instead
of allowing them to put in an even more vague and even more vulnerable group of political hacks, including.
Right.
Some physicians who obviously
like the debate
not,
commission,
very, very much like the debate commission. Republicans on there, but they're all Republicans who hate him.
Yeah.
Remember, there are a lot of the Republican. There are two Republican parties, and the Republican Party has been in a civil war since 1964. So don't let anybody be fooled. What my bill does is the Senate should come back and say, oh, in fact, I make it the short name of this bill, the Calling Nancy's Bluff Act of 2021, to come back. You want to define, this better? Great, let's define it to make sure you can't abuse it.
Yeah.
So I set up and I say, for example, if the allegation is that he's medically or mentally unable to discharge his duties, then the body that decides is his official White House government physician, his personal physician, and his family would appoint one if he doesn't have one, and the highest ranking medical practicing doctor at Walter Reed, and a fourth physician to be appointed by the White House chief of staff. So, you know, they're all going to be physicians. And they're all going to be people where they can't game the systems. Like, well, let's put our people in place, and then we'll come up with these ruse, and we know our people will sign up on it. Plus, this is under penalty of perjury. The Constitution does require a declaration. And while I don't think that, you know, and I think a declaration to Congress or to government is subject to 18 U.S. 1001, which is the same perjury act. They've gone after Michael Flynn. They've gone after Martha Stewart. So if someone were to declare that the president is unfit and they know it would be false, they would be subject to prosecution for perjury or lying to Congress and a whole bunch of things, actually, but probably including insurrection. So in each case, I go through these things that if, you know, for example, if it's something where he were lost, you know, if his vehicle goes down, his airplane is missing, and he can't get in contact, then it would be chief of staff who can't or his next lowest subordinate if the chief of staff was traveling with him. You know, again, so there would be people who would have actual knowledge of what's going on. They're not just reading, you know, it's not just a rumor. And they're not, and because if you think about it, the 25th Amendment right now, presupposes a majority of the cabinet whom the president picked. So the system we have right now is that a majority of people who are the president's appointees would have to say he's disabled. People presumably somewhat loyal to him. The commission that Nancy Pelosi would want to set up would be people who are political hacks who are loyal to the deep state. So that would be a massive change.
Has she filed a bill on this, or is this just an idea at this point? I mean, does she actually have a commission bill? Where does that stand?
I think she does. I haven't tracked it down yet, but the description is that it would be like half of them would be physicians. But again, a physician who has not personally examined a patient is not a physician. They need to be, you know.
The problem with physicians, we've talked about this before. It's just like I have no faith in government climatologists, and that's why I talked to Gregory Wrightstone, you know, who wrote Inconvenient Facts. I have no faith in government doctors. You know, you've got Dr. Fascist who has medical vaccine patents, you know, gets his money from big pharma like the FDA does, who owns them, and to block things like hydroxychloroquine. So doctors, if they're government doctors, this is something you may want to put in the bill. I would, just as I've had something I was working on to get independent people. Oh, yeah. My FDA bill, the FDA overhaul bill, calls for non-government doctors to testify before Congress with findings that they have, like Dr. Zelenko with hydroxychloroquine. So that's how that would work. Do you have anything in here for non-government physicians to examine the president, independent doctors?
I mean, that's why if the allegation is that the president is not mentally or medically or psychologically fit.
Okay.
I would include the White House doctor, his doctor, because that person would know, would have facts, and the president's personal physician as well would have to be on on this committee. Okay. And the chief of staff would pick a fourth, as well as someone, say, from Walter Reed, so that there would be two private physicians chosen by either his family, if it's not his own, or the chief of staff, who presumably, unlike most of the deep state, is super serving at the pleasure of the president. So there would be people who would both have actual knowledge, and also people whose loyalty would be mostly with the president as part of it. So I think that balance is, the White House doctor is going to probably be probably going to be monitoring his health all the time. So it's somebody who actually knows something about what we're talking about. But on the other hand, it should be balanced by people whose loyalty is with the family or something like that.
Okay.
And by the way, I say in the bill, go ahead.
No, same as what you say in the bill, because I'm sort of going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but it's actually relevant.
Well, I'm saying that if it's none of the above, you know, I specify things that you would imagine, like, his plane goes down, and, you know, and you see in the movies, he survived, but nobody knows he survived. Well, to my mind, he's not able to serve, so he would temporarily need an acting president, but until we find out if he's alive or not, or a nuclear bomb goes off or something like that, or does that nuclear disaster. So, check your latest disaster movie. But I say if it's none of the above, then my thing is the family decides. The White House chief of staff will pick, because there's disgruntled family. So I say let the White House chief of staff pick five members of his relatives. If there's no, if it's none of the things that we're familiar with, and it's just some other thing. So there's no limitation on why, you know, what it should be, but it should be a fact-based determination by people who are mostly allied with the president. Say, he's decided to go find himself on the beaches of Fiji or whatever, and he doesn't want to. He's not doing it. He just say, "I've had it. I'm not
stress
doing
leave.
This anymore."
yeah. Provision for stress. Yeah. But this is so subjective, though. And here's the other thing, too, is that I think a lot of procedures are already in place. You know, and it depends on the people. You know, the good laws always require good people to carry them out. I'm sure there are contingencies in place if something, God forbid, happens to the president's airplane or vehicle or wherever he happens to be. I know there's things already there. That's not a question of competence. That's a question of absence. And I think we need to make the distinction between judging a president personally incapable of acting and circumstances that allow that make him incapable of acting. So an airplane or a vehicle comes under circumstances, whereas the personal mental capacity of, say, a Joe Biden right now, who I heard had two aneurysms. That was reported on Fox News' Maria Bartiromo, Sunday Morning Futures, that he's had two brain aneurysms. And that may be a large reason for the mental, you know, degradation that he's suffering. And so this is why I say everybody knows this. This is common knowledge. I'm sure the Democrats know that. So this is why I want something in the bill that says to knowingly use the 25th Amendment for fraudulent purposes, knowing you already have a person that can't do the office for the sole person of sole purpose of removing them, that should be in there too. You know, if you want to comment on that, I got another question for you.
Well, I'm not sure how to do it. I mean, it might be. It might be that
election?
Someone should be investigated before get to that point, before the election. Mm-hmm. I think that it is. It should be fraud. I mean, I'm thinking of taking the position as much just to annoy the Democrats as anything else. But basically, now,
well, that's fun, but we don't vet our presidents. We don't give them security clearances. We don't do a lot of things to presidents that we should be doing. We don't check the birth certificates. And I'm just thinking of Obama. We don't give them. We don't check whether they can have a security clearance. We don't, give them the psychology tests or things like that. We don't give them lie detectors to see if they'll tell us the truth. There's a lot of things we don't do to presidents, to presidential candidates. You know, we subject our national secrets to somebody that just simply got elected, as opposed to someone who was evaluated and then elected. Just a thought.
Yeah, well, that's right. And the, it looks to me like Nancy Pelosi is conceding the election that Biden is going to lose and Trump is going to be the president. She admits this won't come into force until next year. So you know, it seems to me like you could make the argument she's conceding that Trump is going to be president for the next 4 years. Other people are thinking, no, this is just all a PR gimmick to try
to
highlight.
Why would she concede that? That doesn't sound like Nancy Pelosi.
She's telegraphing something she doesn't want to say, but actually believes that he is going to she doesn't want to think it, but she's assuming that it's going to be that Trump is going to be the president to whom this applies. But, you know, people think it's just a fundraising gimmick too. But the problem, and a PR gimmick, but the problem is that as Trump now runs around acting completely, because they tried to say that he was taking steroids for treatment for COVID-19, and therefore he's crazy. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I think it takes years of steroid abuse for it to affect
different kind of steroids. I heard Joe Pags had a presidential physician, a previous presidential physician. I said, look, the different kind of steroids. You can get steroids for a nosebleed or just various, you know, muscle conditions or asthma or different things. I mean, there are steroids and there are steroids. You know, just as there are painkillers and there are painkillers. There's aspirin and there's OxyContin. Okay, they're both painkillers. But one is you know, incredibly addictive, incredibly powerful, and the other one isn't. You know, it's just like for mild headaches. So the degree of the steroid, the steroids are all kinds of different things. I'm not sure medically how they all work, but people take steroids for all kinds of different things. I'm like, you took a steroid for that? You know, are you bulking up in the gym? No, it's an appropriate medical technology for different things. So people get that confused very easily. That's
well,
the point
I'm
making.
There's no one better to be confused than Nancy Pelosi. But the thing
maybe she needs steroids, yeah.
As Trump runs around, you know, looking fit and totally great, it's gonna her highlighting his health, I think, may backfire.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because I raised the issue that now that Trump's had COVID, he's immune. You know, and I started looking up. He said, and all my leftist friends came out and said, no, he's not. He can still transfer the disease. He's still dangerous. You know, what happened? And a couple of things I think of is then the doctors, you know, wrote articles, New York Post, which I post, says, yeah, he's immune for at least 3 months, which should carry him through the inauguration. So he can walk around within, you know, 1 foot of everybody without a mask and be just fine because he's already had it. He's got the immunity. That's the whole point of that's how vaccines work, allegedly, that they make you immune to the disease because your body's already learned how to recognize it.
And the other thing that irritates me is that he's not supposed to wear a mask when he's social distancing. Look at Joe Biden does. The TV news don't. I mean, every time you see the guy, the TV anchor or the TV reporter, off camera, there are staff all around the studio. And they're not wearing a mask. Because it's if you wear a mask or you social distance, not both. And so they're trying to say Trump is anti-mask simply because he's following the correct CDC guidance.
Yeah.
When speaking from a podium, he is not wearing a mask. He's not supposed to. Vice President Biden doesn't. You know, nobody does. I mean, that's why he makes fun of them sometimes is when he's, you know, he's 100 feet away from everybody or he's in his basement all by himself and he's wearing a mask. I mean, that's not the CDC guidance. So just because he follows the CDC guidance correctly does not mean that Trump is anti-mask or on an anti-mask crusade or anything like that.
I am.
But that's a different story.
Okay, that's fine. And there's plenty of reason for it, but there's so many bad. I mean, like I say, take the eyeglass test. Put eyeglasses on and a blue mask, and your eyeglasses can fog up. That means your breath is pouring out the sides.
Yeah.
It's not doing any good because it's fogging up your mask. It's not going through the mask. Anyway, so I don't know how much time we have, but the thing is, he was trying to – I think she did this to try to highlight the idea that he is, you know, he's on a steroid high and he's crazy and he's not fit to be president.
Well, they're always saying that. They're saying that he's had COVID, but he's still contagious, which is not true. They said that asymptomatic transfer, you know, can happen any time. We don't know who had the disease. That's not true. You can't spread the virus unless you have symptoms of the virus, like, you know, sneezing and coughing. Otherwise, it's not going to go anywhere. So covering your nose from what? Breathing too hard? Give me a break. You know, so they're always trying to say that. They're using the 25th Amendment in all kinds of ways. They're using everything they can to say that he's incompetent. He can't go out in public. He can't do this. He can't do that. It's just all part of the same ploy. It's all part of the overturning of the 2016 election. That's what it all comes back to. And it gets proven over and over and over again that what they're doing is lying. They're just trying to get rid of Trump from office. The last thing I want to focus on, let's just take a few more minutes and then we can end the episode. Specific provisions of the bill that you really like, specific clauses in Section 4, you know, the key parts of the bill. If you had to pull out a few things that really summarize what you're trying to do, especially in Section 4 or some of the whereases, where would you go? What would you like people to come away with before we post the bill on Write Your Laws?
One of the main things I think it's important is that where the Constitution used the word declaration in making a declaration to the president, the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem of the Senate, I would say that a declaration qualifies as subject to perjury.
Where's that in the bill?
I've worked it into specific things, and I also put it at the end. I don't remember what it is, but that typically a declaration for a government purpose is subject to 18 U.S.C. 1001. It's a felony to falsely. So that anybody who's looking at, you know, they're going to declare the president unfit, they better be willing to – they better know what they're talking about. They better have the fact, not just gossip or rumor. Mm-hmm. And they better be willing to stand by it to say whether or not they actually knew it to be true.
Yeah. And should they go through a fitness test themselves to determine if they're fit to say the president isn't fit? That might be something interesting, too. Let me just read a little bit of Section 4 just right in the beginning. This is once you get past the background, you get right to the actual bill. And Section 4, Section A Part A of Jonathan's bill says the Congress hereby exercises its authority under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment to create, quote, such other body as Congress may by law provide to determine if, quote, the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Such other body, in quotations, hereby established by law shall be called the Commission on Presidential Disability. Let's do a little bit of C here. All official U.S. government communications and documents. The Commission on Presidential Disability is really what you're creating with this bill, with a different set of criteria than Nancy Pelosi does, and that's the big difference, right? Have I got that pretty much straight?
Right. If she's going to further define it, I want to define it our way.
Okay. Now, where is this bill going to go? What can you do with this? Where? Who? Do you have anybody in the Senate who might be interested? So you're starting with the Senate because the House is Democrat.
Yeah, it would have to. I mean, I don't know the people who are, you know, I know on speed dial, but I think there are people who whether it's Ted Cruz or Marsha Blackburn or, I mean, Lindsey Graham is head of the Judiciary Committee, but mostly all he does is talk.
Yeah, nobody's in handcuffs yet. He's not doing his job. Same thing with Bill Barr. And we had Larry Klayman on last week, and they talked about it. He gave me some really insightful things on Bill Barr, what he's not doing, what John Durham's not doing, and what a whole bunch of them are not doing. Like I say, I'm not going to get excited until I see someone, you know, doing the perp walk. You know, it's just it's very disappointing to me what's not happened.
Well, Larry Klayman worked in the Department of Justice, so the average, you know, the member of the public doesn't understand what they're not doing. But someone who's worked there can say, I know what they're not doing. So, I mean, but the Senate, I mean, so technically, I mean, the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate would be an appropriate.
Okay.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, who actually understands that the Supreme Court is doing all kinds of things they shouldn't be doing, which is, and it did that in a video. Just a quick favor, can you, or do you want, I'd rather you do it because this way your name will be on the bill. If you can take just the whole text of this and just put it right on a writeyourlaws.com bill comment, you know, and that way I can post it, I can link it, I can share it, I can do it. You don't have to change anything. You've got the right, where do you get the stationery anyway? You've got the exact congressional, you know, typeset. Can anybody get that, or is that proprietary somehow?
I copied that from a actual bill a long time ago, and I've used it several times since then.
You're breaking up a little bit, unfortunately. Yeah.
You know, I had to type it out myself. Anyway,
yeah, I missed that too. Now you're back. Okay, good. There we go. Yeah. Well, we can do it later. Yeah.
All right. I guess, are we out of time?
No, we're supposed to, I've got 16 minutes left here, but I don't want to use it all. I think we're pretty much we've covered what we need to cover. I was just going to say that this bill form. Well, here's a question for you: if should we submit our citizen legislation in the form that I have it at writeyourlaws.com, or would it look more authoritative if we put it on this specific congressional, you know, format that they have, that you use for your bills?
I don't know. The reason I do things that way sometimes is that sometimes whether somebody supports it or not is really focused on what it actually says. I mean, sometimes you can say in a paragraph, I think you should do a bill to do blah, and then
right.
They get it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to understand exactly what you're saying unless you see the nuances written up. I think it depends on what the proposal is. If you could say it in a paragraph or two, you go, aha, I know exactly what you mean. And that's probably better. I have a friend who I've mentioned who beats me up, has beaten me up since 2003, that shorter is always better. You know, I don't always agree with that. I say it depends. So I think it depends. I mean, yeah, it is more impressive, but then they have to wade through all the details before they get to the meat.
Yeah.
You know,
plus I went to section four. But I don't want.
Right.
It's your bill, so I don't want to, you know, go into that. But what I think we can do, if you could just post my logic of doing writeyourlaws.com in our format, which is basically just, you know, paragraphs, regular sentences, is that citizens will see that as citizen bills. In other words, if we do what Congress, if we use that bill form that you have that looks like it's coming directly from Congress, it's going to look like we're sort of usurping the legislative authority. And I don't want anybody in Congress to get the impression that we are taking over their job, because we're not. In fact, we just want them to do their job better. But we're supplying a starting point with citizen legislation, and then they can put it into their bill form as they do it. Now, you use it now, which is fine. I mean, obviously, I don't have a, you know, problem with it. But I'm thinking of the two different versions. Yeah, go ahead, and then I got Josie. She wants to join us for a bit.
That comes down to human relations. It's,
okay.
It's psychology instead of, because the thing is that, you know, for example, I wrote a draft lawsuit for somebody,
mm-hmm.
a good friend, and she got mad at me. Because she thought I had filed it.
Oh, okay, because
so
it was in the form.
Yeah, because I said, here's what exactly I think you should file. And it was misunderstood. So there's no legal one-size-fits-all as to personal relations and psychology. You just never know. I remember when I ran.
We can do both forms too. I mean, we can do the congressional form, and we can do the write your laws form, and use both of those. But you're breaking up. I'm missing like half what you're saying sometimes. So quick comment, then let's get Josie on. Then I think we've pretty much covered what we need to cover today. Go ahead, Jonathan. Oh, now I can't hear him. Great. Let's bring on Josie. And unless they're cutting me off again,
Hey.
I apologize for the technical difficulties we're having today. It's kind of a mess. Josie, why don't you go ahead real quick and we'll get back to Jonathan.
Yeah, I'm
sorry.
You can hardly hear him. The phone is bad.
Your phone is bad
to
too. I think it's the signal because you're breaking. Am I breaking up?
Yeah.
Or am I okay?
No.
Yeah. So your phone's breaking up.
You guys were talking about Lindsay and Bill Barr. So far, they haven't arrested. They haven't done what they should have been doing already a long time ago. And I'm very disappointed in not arresting everybody behind the Russia and Ukraine collusion and all the collusion against Trump from the very beginning. You know,
yeah.
It's very sad because this is not the way we American people do things here. We follow the laws, and if we break the laws, people should pay the price. And so far, nobody's paying the price at all.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. We don't have time to get into a big discussion on that, but that might be something for the next legal report, is why hasn't anybody been arrested? You know, what the evidence is there. You know, that'd be a great question. Jonathan, if you want to sum up your bill, I think we should probably head on out of here in a couple of minutes. And then, thank you for writing the bill. It's been fascinating talking over the weekend to sort of see what can we do about this. You know, this what it looks to me like just a massive election fraud, along with all the other frauds that are coming out of the Democrats. Anything you want to leave us with, and then we'll get our bill posted, or if you can post it on Write Your Laws.
We've kind of covered it pretty well, except it does probably need more detail, and I threw together what I wrote so far. The introduction in a bill, the findings of Congress actually are important.
Okay.
When a court evaluates a law, they look at the findings of Congress as actual factual findings as the reason for the bill.
Okay.
It justifies it. So that's part of what's going on there. But no, I think that we should get, there are a lot of things that by law should be nailed down so that they can't play as many games. But the biggest things is that, there are no arrests because the people who would do the arrests are usually in on it. So we'll talk further.
Yeah. Well, here's what we can do. If you can get this on writeyourlaws.com, it's easier for us to edit and get comments, and people can write right on the bill. This is why I like the way the website's constructed the way it is. That's writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. And if it's there, people can comment. We keep the comments. We keep the legislative history. We keep the different versions of it so that we can kind of, model and adapt it. And these things can be changed. Congress is going to amend it. We amend our bills. We can kind of go from there. Let me just say thank you for writing this, Jonathan. And let's talk about it again. Let's see where we stand with it. I don't have a chance to read it because it was done literally right before showtime. And so it's an amazing effort that you put forward over this weekend to get that out there. That should do it for me. Anybody else have a final comment? Josie?
Well, it's a corruption, what's going on, and they're probably going to torture this poor new judge like they did with Brett Kavanaugh. They're dirty, and that's what they're going to do to this one again, So
we'll
we have
watching.
To pray for her.
We'll be watching after the show tomorrow. Watch your eyes, though. That woman has the most intense eyes I've ever seen. She watches everybody and everything. You hear that earlier in the show? Yeah. Jonathan, you get the last word, and then we'll pick it up again tomorrow, and we'll see what happens on the hearings.
No, watch them like a hawk. Don't let them get away with anything. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Josie. Okay. Jonathan Mosley, our attorney who does all kinds of wonderful stuff, and he's written a bill. Josie, who's always there, all the time with some just amazing comments, too. Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. If you want to support us, patreon.com/actionradio. And we'll be back tomorrow at 7, and let's do it again.